I'm Corinne Bailey-Ray, and you're listening to the Heart Speaks in Whispers podcast.
And the heart speaks in whispers. And the heart speaks in whispers.
We've nearly reached the end of our journey through the themes and personal experiences that came together to form the songs on my record, The Heart Speaks in Whispers. We've covered the restorative power of nature, the body, our intuition, subconscious minds, and the healing power that music can have. The final theme we're going to be exploring is the value of being present. Are our online lives drowning out our inner lives? Do our digital dependencies curtail or fuel creativity?
So they've already run, and we all fall down in the clouds and blot out the sun. Very soon.
I'm really interested in the idea of being present. I feel like someone who used to always think about the future, and through the different experiences of my life, I feel like I've come to really value the present moment. Really feel what's going on around me and just feel gratitude for it. And one thing that I feel like I've noticed is we're not all in the moment together, including myself sometimes. There are so many times when I go into a public space and you realize that, you know, you're not getting eye contact with anyone because all of us are looking at our various screens, we're looking at our phones, looking at our computers, we're checking the news, we're caught in this sort of cycles of getting in as much information as possible and entertaining ourselves at every single second. Antoine Geiger is a French photographer whose recent photo series, Surfake, illustrates the extent of the distraction our smartphones and devices can be.
In each image, you can see people using their phone, but their face is being completely sucked into the screen. I'm highlighting here a kind of disconnection between people and their surroundings. But what I'm pointing at is interfaces that are actually replacing interactions. So all of the images are showing this, and then I try to take pictures of different people, you know, not to show that it's just one generation. That's not true. For example, there's one picture of an old man, I really like it, and he's carrying his newspaper, not reading it, and completely being sucked into his phone. I wanted to create a strong image, a strong feeling, and that's a place in Paris by the Mona Lisa, exactly. I think it's the most, I don't know, there's so many people just taking selfies or pictures of the painting and not even looking at the painting itself. And in this case, it was a couple of Chinese people, and they bought themselves those blue berets, you know, to think they're very Parisians, but actually we don't wear those in Paris. And they took this selfie, so you can see the Mona Lisa behind them, and them both just taking the selfie and their face being sucked also, but not looking at the picture, just looking at their ego. It just completely shows what I feel and think every day. It's this kind of loss of identity. That's really what I see there. That's why I did it. A lot of people reacted to this work, and I guess that's the most important. So it made people think and stand back, at least for a second, you know, what's going on with us, with them, with, you know, what we do together or not on the internet, etc. If you are bored and you use your phone, I guess it's not creative most of the time. The times I've been the most creative were when I had no battery, no electricity, nothing. And, you know, after 1 hour accepting this condition, you just start doing things because you have so many stuff around you. And you can do so many things in just one room with your hands. Or just your brain, you know, just thinking or singing or writing. And I don't think you need your phone. I think the phone is good to record things, but not to create.
New York artist Nina Khachaturian has a different take on our relationship to our smartphones, using hers as a primary tool to create art.
Seat Assignment is a project that began very spontaneously on a flight 6 years ago now between Atlanta and New York City. So I had about 2.5 hours of flying time ahead of me, and I sat down in my seat and I thought, why is it that this time already kind of doesn't count? I'm inclined to just think of it as time I'm going to waste or time when nothing interesting is going to happen. And I decided that was a sort of a bad attitude to take towards this few hours of life in front of me. And I decided instead of doing that to give myself the task to try to use it optimistically and actively and to try to make things the entire way to Atlanta. And so given that I hadn't thought about this beforehand, what I had to work with was whatever was around me and my cell phone. And I got to work. 6 years later and 184 flights into this project, I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photographs and a few music videos also of things that I've made on the plane, most of them made in my seat, a few of them made in spaces like the airplane bathroom as well. One very important rule, and I have never strayed from this rule since the first day this project started, is that I only take pictures using my cell phone. And this is important in part because it fits with the ethos of the project to only use what I have. I also don't want it to look like I'm making art. I really want to look like a bored passenger trying to pass the time. And ironically, that's exactly what I'm trying not to be. I'm trying not to be somebody who has sort of written off the time as unremarkable or unuseful. But, you know, we carry these things around in our pockets every day. And I know there's a lot of grousing and kind of lamenting the fact that our mobile devices take us away from the world and remove us from direct contact with one another. And my feeling about that is, you know, it's really not the tool's fault, it's what we do with it. And I think that for me, my cell phone has been, my mobile phone and the camera on it especially, has been a way of actually making me pay more attention to the world. And certainly in the situation of being on a plane, there are all kinds of things I'm doing with that time that I never would have done before I had a camera in my pocket. So there was a very long flight that I took in 2011, and this was the result of an invitation to come to New Zealand on an artist residency, where I would then have an exhibition at the end of the artist residency. And I was about a year into the seat assignment project at that point, and I asked this museum if they would be willing to entertain the idea that I would make the entire exhibition on my way to New Zealand, because I realized I had 20 hours of flight time from New York to get there, which was just staggeringly long. And I thought, you know, this would be a good chance to kind of test the project. They bravely agreed to this experiment. And so I started the trip. And on the long leg between San Francisco and Auckland, I ended up spending a lot of time in the lavatory. And the reason for that was that on a flight about 6 months before, I had spontaneously gone into the bathroom and ended up deciding to try to make a costume for myself. It was something I hadn't tried yet. And I took a tissue paper seat cover and sort of fashioned it into a hat of sorts. And I looked at the photograph later when I sat down in my seat and I thought, that's strange. I sort of look Flemish, or look like one of those Flemish paintings that I've seen in museums for years and have always loved. And I had no idea why I did that, but I thought I should maybe make a few more of these and then maybe I'll understand more about it. Sure, I mean, these photos have had a very lively viral life online, which has been both kind of interesting and a little bit problematic for me. The dilemma, I think, when an art project ends up online, and especially for me, the dilemma when a small section of a much larger project has kind of run away from the bigger project, as those Flemish portraits have, it's difficult to get people to focus on what this project is really about for me. It's not about a prank where I go into a bathroom and dress myself up. That's not the point. That is not why I did it. It's a project that wants us to really think about our everyday. It wants to pose this question again and again of, you know, what can you make out of nothing? What can you make in a place and a time when art doesn't even seem possible or likely? Those to me are much more serious questions about our engagement with the world.
Tender is a light that shines on you. Gentle is a morning made anew. Delicate and grace we've come to. My love.
Nina's approach to her work shows that she's not waiting for the perfect moment to create art. I wrote a song on my album called Stop Where You Are, which is about being in the moment. It's about the ways in which we sometimes hold our happiness away from ourselves. We can say, you know, when I get this job, I'll be happy, or when I lose this weight, I'll be happy, or when I get on my holiday, I'll be happy. And it's so easy for us to sort of push our happiness away from ourselves, waiting for this perfect moment that we've idealized in our mind. One thing that I think really pulls us out of the present and something I'm really conscious of is the way that we use our digital devices and our smartphones.
My name is Anastasia Dedukhina. I'm the founder of Consciously Digital. It is a London-based training and coaching company, and we help people find a balance between their tech lives and offline lives.
What was the catalyst for you starting Consciously Digital?
It's a personal story, actually. I worked for more than 12 years in digital marketing for very big internet brands and also for a number of startups. And obviously, when you work in the tech space, you tend to be connected 24/7. So when I was dealing with the clients, I could expect them to email me at 3 a.m. And obviously, they would also expect me to get back to them. So I was sleeping with my phone. And at a certain point when my last contract came to an end, I realized that I needed to take a break. And I decided that I will go on a digital diet and replace my smartphone with a very basic Nokia that has no internet on it whatsoever. I never thought about making a business out of it up until I experienced how great it was actually not to be connected, or rather to be choosing when I want to be connected and when not. And I started telling people about that, and I had a coaching qualification at the time. So they asked me, well, do you coach people around it? And I said, no, not really. And they said, well, this actually can be a really interesting thing to do. And I started looking into like what neuroscience says about how technology impacts our brains, how we're changing as humans when we overuse devices. And that's basically how Consciously Digital was born.
I thought that it was an older established company. But
thank you.
It's a very contemporary problem and issue. So why do you think that it's important that we control our usage of technology?
Consciously Digital is not about making everyone give up their smartphones. That's very important. The problem with technology is that it removed all the boundaries between, say, our public lives and private lives. You know, like you publish incredible things about yourself in the open space. Like it's possible to know anything about everyone right now. And also it removed the boundaries between your work life and your personal life. So basically what we are trying to do with our work is to put the boundaries back in place. For example, even 20 years ago, most people, when they were working in the office, they wouldn't know when their work is finished, wasn't it? Today, it's not the case, right? Especially with knowledge workers, so with people who work with information or in the services. Because technology enables us to stay connected all the time and to be checking your emails all the time, which means that basically the work never finishes, which is very bad for our brain, because our brain needs time to process information. It's a little bit like food and digestion. It's great when you have a lot to eat, and it's even better when the food is good, but also you need to give time to your stomach to digest. And even with the best food, if you overfeed your stomach and you don't allow it some time to process the food, just as our brain needs time to process information, then you're going to have tummy problems. And the same way, you might also experience, you know, brain-related problems like stress or feeling overwhelmed or just even depressed when you're overusing your technology.
You've talked a lot on your blog about boredom and the importance of boredom. How important do you think it is for us as humans to regularly experience being bored?
So a lot of people really try to avoid boredom, like hell. One of the reasons is that, A, we're used to constant stimulation, and that's outside stimulation. And the second is that when you're bored and when there is space in your head and around you, then you might start experiencing, you know, like some unpleasant thoughts maybe, or something that you actually don't want to be looking at. So this is definitely, now, escaping boredom is a legitimate way to escape from yourself. The truth is that yourself is something you can't escape from. You know, you can only suppress it or you can ignore certain things. So boredom is extremely important in terms of knowing better yourself and what's important for you. But also it's extremely important for any type of creativity. Now, boredom means that you're just leaving your brain without any stimulation. And from the neuroscientific point of view, what happens at that time is your brain rearranges all the information that you have So living it alone for some time is extremely important, because once this information is arranged in a certain way, then you're able to access this information. So then you're able to create some connections, you know, because creativity comes when you are connecting things that don't seem to be connected anymore. And this requires time, and this requires space, and this requires boredom.
It's interesting to talk about the volume of information, but I think also to look at the sort of nature of the information that we're getting. You know, when you were talking about nutrition and food, I thought how sometimes the way that we receive the information online is so sort of crushed and packed full with stimulus that it can definitely affect the way that we perceive the real world in that sense. And for example, I think about something like Instagram. We look at all these pictures, and they're sort of idealized pictures in the sense that they've actually been physically altered. And then we look at real life and we sort of compare real life to this kind of constantly curated set of images.
Most of the things online, whether it's curated or not, they're created in order to excite your brain. You really feel an urge to, you know, push the button or see notifications, and that's actually engineered experience. Of course, you know, like when after this very highly stimulating experience, you look at the outside world, it's not so exciting anymore, especially if you don't have other experience, so especially if you're a kid or if you're a teenager. Another thing is to bear in mind is that we go on social media mainly because we want to increase our social status. So again, scientists have studied a lot this topic, and it seems like, for example, when we're getting a like or so, this helps us increase our social rank, right? So by definition, if we're specifically talking about social media, when you're going there, you're either increasing your social rank or you're decreasing it in a way, right? So it's quite hierarchical, and it's also very adrenaline and dopamine driven. Dopamine is a hormone of pleasure, and one of the things that we humans find pleasurable is when we get social recognition. One way to overcome this is to pay more attention to bonding, and actually to be, funny enough, more active on social media. The person who just simply follows others without actively engaging into conversations tend to get more depressed. The moment when you start asking questions and genuinely being interested in what other people are doing, or, you know, even kind of liking their pictures or posting comments, that's what produces oxytocin, which is the hormone of bonding. And, you know, like it's the hormone of love, friendship. It's what brings people together. In essence, if you feel that you don't want to limit your kind of social media usage, but you want to be happier with it, make sure that you're active when you use it. Don't use it passively.
So much of what Anastasia had to talk to me about was about the importance of balance. I loved her comparison of digital use to food and how you wouldn't constantly eat food without a chance to digest. We need to take pauses in all the things we do. Speaks in whispers. On the heart speaks in whispers. That's been a recurring theme throughout this series for me. The importance of stopping, looking up, and reconnecting with ourselves and with the world. I hope that you've enjoyed this series as much as I have. It's really struck me the interconnectedness of all these different subjects, of how when we listen to our inner selves, we're powerful and we can change our lives. The heart speaks in whispers. You've got to listen.
speaks in whispers. You've got to listen.